everybody. Welcome to Sonic Talk, episode 537, recording today live on the 20th of June 2018. We're in the throes of the first round of the FIFA World Cup. For those of you who are interested, I've been sneaking a few matches at work once in a while. And of course, England managed to win their first one, somewhat unconvincingly, but still. 3 points are 3 points. This isn't a soccer podcast at all. It's to do with music technology. We talk about music technology, synthesizers, software, live production, plugins, all that kind of thing. And we'll be with you for the next hour or so. And we also have a couple of messages from our sponsors. First time, we've got Isotope, who will be telling you a little bit about Vocal Synth 2, which you can also win this week if you're interested, because they give that very generously as a prize, which you can enter a little bit later. Competition details will happen further on into the show. And also I want to say thank you to Synchro Arts. They're letting you know about Revoice Pro, which is currently 30% off till the end of June, which is a bit of a bargain. And I know if you perhaps listen to another couple of shows, you'll know that Robbie swears by it. It's a very useful program for lining up vocals, for creating double tracks, harmonies, all kinds of stuff. So do check that out as well. That's if you just go to synchroarts.com or bit.ly/revoice30, we'll get you there via us and they'll be able to track the link. Anyway, welcome one and all. This is Sonic Talk. Let's get going. So we'll start off with Mr. Gaz Williams. I can't remember if it's been a couple of weeks since we've had you on, or were you on last week? I can't honestly remember. My memory is shocking. Gaz Williams, of course. Gaz Williams.me, professional bass player, producer, engineer, music technologist, all round that sort of chap. How are you, Gaz?
I'm very good, thank you very much. I recently got a new screen for my studio. I wanted to get a 4K screen because I want to... but this is a little kind of word of warning, actually. So I've got a Mac Pro here and got this screen, plugged it in. Robbie Bronneman came around, we had a look at it, and it was just so slow and sluggish. It was horrible to use. And I wondered if it was a screen. And anyway, eventually, after a little bit of research, discovered that... that the Mac Pro only supports HDMI 1.4, which only allows 4K at 30 hertz. So it was actually running at 30 hertz, hence everything feeling really, really, just not nice. However, it's not all bad news, because there is a little program you can get. I guess a lot of people are going to find themselves in this boat, actually, with because, I mean, I just bought a telly. I mean, the 4K screen, what, it was about 330 quid or something, you know, for 40-inch 4K screen. Television as opposed to a monitor, but there is a little program called Switch Res X, which lets you run custom resolutions. But that's not all. You need to get a little kind of adapter.
Not Thunderbolt to HDMI.
Thunderbolt. Well, DisplayPort to HDMI 2.0. So if you get that, and then this little, and also running this Ta-da. Switch Res X.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's about 12 quid to register that piece of software. Then you can have a giant 4K screen running at the 60 hertz. Now, I didn't know any of this, so this has been a bit of a learning experience for me. So I thought I'd share that, because, I mean, it's a weird restriction of Mac, really. Certainly the Mac Pro, so... You know, because they show. I was really surprised, because the Mac Pro, one of the selling points was you can run six displays on it, and I think it was six HD displays, and then three 4K displays. So I was just really surprised to have that. But anyway, that's the solution. So there we go. I thought I'd share that.
Top tip. Thank you very much, Gaz, and more from your technological journey. Nice to hear that. We've also got Mr. Richard Hilton, who is. Tell me you're at a Hilton hotel, just because, even if you're not. I've done that gag before, haven't I, when you show up. Mr. Hilton, yes, we've got your suite ready for you, and the band are looking at you like going, hey, why has he got the great room? And it's like, you know what, guys? It's who you know.
It doesn't happen that way. But there is always a little humor involved, and it's fine. After 62 years of hotel jokes, you get used to it after a while. Each one told as though the first.
I'm surprised. If you had a daughter, you could have called her Paris, I suppose, and then it would have really had a lot of fun. But
that would have been high on my to-do list, I'm sure.
Anyway, Rich, so you're in London. You've been you're still this side of the world doing chic stuff. We know. I saw a bit of your show on Late with Jules Holland, which was good, with two guitarists. I can't remember the name of the guy. He was playing a Fender Jaguar by the looks of it and was riffing away. I think it was that, or maybe it was a Jazzmaster. I can't remember.
No, it was a Jaguar. It was a Jaguar, as you guys say, and you hit it right on the head. His name is Muramasa. And he's a very nice and talented man. And it was a great honor to play on Jules and meet Jules. And what an organization they have over there. What an amazing production that show is. The logistics of managing cameras in that space and never being in the shot is incredible.
Oh, yeah.
I watched those guys in of their ability to stay out of the shot while they were this whole choreography, and they practiced the choreography of the cameras. And it was really an amazing thing to me to see. And we played a show, we played some songs and it was fun. And we had some guests and we premiered some new songs and it's all good. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So it's got the new album out and all that. And did I see you on Facebook? You just happened to bump into Paul McCartney last night as well, which is a bit of a... Check that out.
Yes. Niall shows up at soundcheck with who's that with him? Wait a minute. Really? As I waited my brief turn to get to shake the man's hand, I heard a voice in my head say, "You're about to shake the hand of Paul McCartney." It all started for me, the whole sort of overriding direction of my life that has turned out to be, started in February of 1964, watching those four guys on the Ed Sullivan Show. I'd heard about them from a friend who was actually a babysitter of mine at the time, and who remains a friend, who is no longer my babysitter. and I sat there. I was just enthralled, and it changed the course of my life. And
wow.
All of the other heroes that I've had and met and played with, this guy came first. And getting to shake his hand yesterday, I didn't say a word. I wouldn't have known what to say. But I was just so thrilled.
I really love you, Paul. You're great. Yeah.
Yeah,
It must all happen all the time, I guess, to someone like him. But yeah, that
nothing I have to say to him that takes less than a couple of paragraphs, at least. So that wasn't going to happen.
So what number did that? So presumably he was performing with you guys, right? What did?
No.
What, no,
no, he wasn't performing, and I don't think he was at the gig.
Oh, it's just a hello.
Which was well attended by a lot of apparently glitterati and models and stuff. It had something to do with fashion, and it's some kind of big party they throw every year near the Serpentine Gallery in the park, and everybody here would know the name of it, but I don't. And I referred to it as the most glitzy backyard barbecue I'd ever played, because it did have that sort of size and venue and feel of playing in somebody's large backyard, you know, well-equipped backyard. There wasn't the smell of barbecue, which was missing from that experience, but it just felt like a backyard barbecue.
Nice. Did you see the, there's a new sculpture, isn't there, in the Serpentine, I think, which is made up of like, I don't know, slows. I was watching something about it yesterday. Masses and masses of oil cans just floating on the lake, which is a temporary structure.
Is that what they are?
Yeah, yeah. It's a kind of representation of one of the early Egyptian pyramid type structures, I believe.
Yes, I thought it was this huge Lego thing. It looked like Legos to me from a distance, so now I'm really intrigued to discover that it's a bunch of oil cans. But it was magnificent.
Yeah, very
big. It was
really
stunning and striking and very cool, and it just kind of comes up out of the water in the river there. It's very nice.
There till September, folks. I might try and get to see it sometime. Anyway, let's also say hello to Mr. Steve Hillier. Steve Hillier there in a studio in Brighton, where we can see he's decided to put his credentials on show this week. We've got the Yamaha CP70. Is that MS-20?
Yep.
System 100 and some black keyboards that I can't tell what they are from here.
That's on the top there, that's Prophet 600, which I've had for a long time, with the Gligly processor update, which changes it from being a really sluggish, 1983 analog digital hybrid into just an amazing sounding keyboard. I'd use it as often as I can. Underneath that, DX7, which is my official favorite keyboard of all time. A bit controversial, but there it is. And then underneath that, it's a JD 800, which I've had since the Dubstar days in the early 90s. So,
have you run out of presets on it yet?
When I first got it, I programmed one thing, which was a sort of a Gary Newman Polymoog sound, and that's essentially the only thing I've ever used it for. But it does sound really good, in a very limited way. But that's the JD800, I suppose. It's nice to look at, I suppose.
Yeah. Is you need some under keyboard lighting to bring out the features because they look a bit faceless where it is, but something to work on perhaps. Some fairy lights underneath or something like that. Anyway, Steve, of course, formerly Dubstar, or still is Dubstar. I don't know if is it an ongoing project. I don't know if it is.
It's not with my involvement. I left the band quite a long time ago.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. And educator, producer, writer, DJ, performer—all of those things. So let's get cracking then. What do you think of this? This is the Slate and Ash Aurus. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. It's contact instrument, and it just is really beautifully scripted and designed for work with controllers and MPE as well. And I have to say, some of these sounds really are very... I just sort of look at them and go, oh, I really like to play that with a Roly. I could listen to that for ages. In fact, I did. I listened to that, and there's another video where they just use MPE controllers only. And it's a very, it's like one of those libraries where it's almost like a one finger kind of soundtrack thing. But it feels like they've done quite a lot of work on that movement and that control and that kind of thing. I know, Rich, I'm guessing you probably haven't had time to research, but I know you've got a Roly. Is this the sort of thing? Oh, you did. Okay. Is this the sort of thing that would float your boat, or are you preferring to go for more articulations of instruments that respond more to the actual playing technique in terms of articulation and that sort of thing?
Okay, first of all, it interests me because as a Roly lover, I'm desperate for more sound sources that don't require me standing on my head and spitting nickels to make it work.
Yeah.
So if this is one of those, in other words, if I don't have to launch 12 instantiations of this thing in contact to make it work, which is what I have to do now, then I'm all about it. And I love the idea. Now, that said, the sounds, yes, it sounds pretty good to me almost all the time. And then I look at that interface and it's like 5 knobs in an ADSR. And for $150, I want more than 5 knobs in an ADSR. So that was my response. Now I have to play with it. I haven't played with it. I admit I'm talking strictly out of just looking at it and listening to their demo. I haven't even seen it operated. So from the standpoint of somebody who is starved for more good sources that I can use easily for my MPE gear, I'm very interested in this thing. It seems a little bit expensive to me for a sound library, basically, and a few tweak knobs. If it was a full-blown synthesizer kind of interface, then maybe I could justify that cost, and maybe I'm being unusually cruel to the poor guys who wrote this thing, but I just think it sounds great, but for what it is, it's too expensive.
It's interesting, actually. I think there's a couple more depth to it. If I bring that's the main panel, and then there's another kind of set of macros, which allow you what looks like a lot more modulation matrix, arpeggio, so there's a bit more going on there. But yeah, it's not a familiar synthesis envelope, but as is often the case with contact stuff, and certainly I'm imagining the amount of stuff you could get to with MPE. I don't know, Gaz, have you got any Roly stuff? I can't remember whether you had, because I know you didn't get one with the blocks, but have you got the little guy, have you got this thing?
I had the I had the Rise for a while, for about 3 or 4 months. I thought it was pretty cool, except I didn't like the gateway into using it, you know, partly just the fact it was USB and whatever. And around similar time, I was reviewing the Linstrument. So I had the Linstrument here as well, obviously another MPE device. And so I tried to develop patches for specifically with the, you know, that kind of MPE approach. And, you know, it's really actually quite difficult because, you know, trying to work out what is the most emotive parameter to have to adjust, you know, and it's so, you know, it'd be quite interesting to see what these guys have chosen, you know, because, I mean, you know, it's all very well and good having all this expressivity, but what is the best things to modulate? I mean, you know, obviously, you know, the filter kind of side of things, but and maybe LFO speeds. But, you know, I mean, that's what I'm quite interested in. As I said, MPE thing expands is what are the kind of
ways,
you know. But, I mean, this does sound pretty cool. I think my sort of problem with the Roly a little bit was, I think this is more specific Roly than MPE, though, was where it excels at sort of textures and pads. Well, actually, no, leads as well, but I think it's not. Well, I should say, I think polyphonic kind of expression is really cool. But I found personally that I've got a lot more use out of using the Touche, you know, and sort of using just.
Well, it's much it's much easier to play and apply. I agree. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but, you know, that's just sort of just my take on it, really. But it's still cool, though, and I'm really glad to see the MPE thing becoming this, you know, now it's a standard and products are coming out to exploit that. I think, you know, it's definitely a good thing. So, yeah, cool. That's good. Looks interesting.
Steve, I don't know if this is something that, I mean, because you know, you're a keyboard player. I mean, I'd imagine, like many of us, the thought of having to learn a new interface is probably what puts you off kind of throwing yourself into something like this.
To an extent. I mean, I have tried out the Roly keyboard a few times, although not in any kind of professional capacity, and I've really liked it. What's kind of slowed down my, or just stopped me adopting it at this point is, yeah, first of all, I'm going to have to learn a whole load of new techniques. And I'm getting old, you know, that doesn't really appeal, but that wouldn't stop me. The other thing was something that Rich said, which is that it would seem for me to use this keyboard in what I do, I'm going to have to set up so many different synthesizers with so many different parameters to be controlled by this keyboard. It's going to be a real headache. So I'm looking forward to the moment where the synthesizers that I mainly use, which are things like Chromaphone 2, which I absolutely love, which would be perfect for this, just come with templates so that I can just go to the keyboard, start doing something, and the texture of the model instrument will change and evolve in a natural way without me having to spend hours setting it up. Essentially, I think what I'm saying here is I want somebody else to do all the hard work. But, you know, it's nothing to you.
Yeah, I can see.
To be fair, the options that exist are actually outstanding. And I've been finding myself being able to be very effective. I did a keyboard session recently on my Seaboard Block, triggering over Bluetooth my iPad mini playing through an Apogee interface and going straight into a DAW. And it was absolutely effective and satisfying and fun. So the options that are available are quite good and quite often good enough for what you need to do. And it's not that hard in certain DAWs, mostly the Apple stuff, because they allow you to receive 16 MIDI channels on the fader, which is what you really need to be able
to live your screen, really.
Ableton, Studio One, Pro Tools, pretty much the rest of them. You got it. And even within Kontakt, you got to set up one instance of whatever you want to hear for each channel you want to hear it on. And it's once you've done that, you can save macros and Kontakt. And there are ways around it. But essentially, I'm wishing for more stuff like Steve is that just goes ahead and does this.
Yeah.
And doesn't make me have to do all that.
Well, interestingly, I did see in the news recently, didn't Roly just get a massive amount of investment from Sony? Which is quite an interesting. Sony are sort of starting to kind of embrace the concept of create music creation rather than replication, perhaps as an arm to their already, you know, massive commercial weight, whatever it is. So I'd be interested to see whether whether that works out. That's a very interesting technique. And you know, aside, because we've all frankly been quite baffled about the amounts of investment that Roly have managed to get, considering of the niche of what they do. So obviously there's something else there that perhaps we don't know about, that somebody like Sony would go, yeah, okay, I can see where this is worth us putting in a big pile of cash. But back to the Auras, it's Slate and Ash. If you go to slateandash.com, it's there. I think 149 intro price. I'm not sure what it comes at. I think maybe it's 199. I don't know. I'd have to check that out. But it's currently intro price. 179. There we go. So it's not massive saving. But yeah, it is an expensive thing. But by the looks of it, there's quite a lot of MPE programming that's gone into it. So that's kind of cool, I guess. What's the time? Yes. Right. So I'm going to just bring in a quick word from Isotope. Of course, this is the new Vocal Synth 2, which we posted a demo of recently, and it's really impressive what it does. New GUI, new interface, lots of stuff behind the scenes as well, which is really impressive. CompuVox, BioVox, all new effects, reorderable effects, lots of presets. There's some really good sounds in there. If you want to check it out for vocal processing, in fact, I want to try it out on synths as well, because I think it'll work on that. There's all sorts of other effects. Go to isotope.com/vocal synth, and that's where you could get a hold of a 10-day free demo. Or alternatively, you can enter our competition and you can win a copy of Vocal Synth. In fact, we have a winner from last week, and the winner is Stephen B. Coleman. Stephen B. Coleman, C-O-L-L-M-A-N, who tweeted the hashtags that we were after last week, and Finesse and Distress Vocal Production, Vocoder Love Vocal Synth 2. So if you want to get in touch, Stephen, we will get your code over to you. And if you want to win a copy this week, we have another competition. So the hashtag we're looking for is Vocal Transformer, that's one word, and Vocal Synth 2, hashtag Vocal Synth Transformer, and the hashtag Vocal Synth 2, to at Sonic State and at Isotoping. That's a Twitter competition. Just pop those in a tweet, and you will be automatically entered into the prize draw for next week. Once again, we thank Isotope for their continued support of the show. Right, let's see. And now, I'm going to go with this one, Steve, because we had this... Hold on, where is it? I'm trying to find the actual... Here we go. Make the worst of your sound. This was just a sort of... obviously, a bit of headline grammar. This is called Glitch Rack from a company called Noise Bites. Not much more information on it, but it's make the worst of your sound. This idea of sort of messing it up and destruction and destroying the sound, which I think perhaps for as long as plugins have been available, not only have we had the sort of emulations of classics gear, we've also had things that will really brutally destroy, bit crush and mangle the sounds. I remember when I first started out using plugins, I think the first couple I used were probably from Rough Rider and Combinat, which are from Audio Damage, which were really lovely ways of kind of crunching and breaking up the sound. And I know, Steve, you said, oh, I can't make it this week, but if you save the topic, I've got lots to say. So hence, over to you now, Steve.
Right. Well, I mean, first of all, God, I feel like I've been put on the spot here now, but hey. I think there's something kind of really important in sort of music production and the use of these glitch instruments and distortion in lots of different ways, which I'll ultimately come on to. But when we're making electronic music, we tend to think, particularly with Ableton Live, we tend to think quite linearly. We build a loop, we build a 4-bar block, and we let that play. And through the process of refining that piece of music, we remove randomness. We remove the unexpected, because the refinement gets rid of that unexpected element. And I think that's where these glitch plugins and are really useful. It means that even you can have a well-defined groove or chord sequence or a harmonic situation or sonic situation, but the use of these plugins, especially if you're performing with them, gives you, and the audience particularly, a sense of, unpredictability. What's going to happen next to this sound that they're already familiar with? And this touches on, I think, a very important thing to do with music in general, which is that almost all popular entertainment depends on sort of essentially one concept, which is that you give the audience what they're familiar with, but you add in a surprise, something that they don't expect. And this is where the glitch plugins are really useful, in the sense that people can be familiar with your beat, they can be familiar with where you're going with the groove, but when you mess it up with these unpredictable elements, it keeps the audience interested. It keeps them, I suppose, literally in some cases, on their toes. So it's a really important thing to, I think, have involved in your music to some degree. And I would just, I'd give one example of this predictability versus controlled randomness thing. There's a style of music that I absolutely love called trap. I'm sure like everyone here has heard of trap and what that's like. But there's a sort of format to that style where you have these long, quite fast build-ups. We've all heard them, loads of snares going on. And then there's a two-bar pause, and some guy usually says something crazy like, you know, drop bass or whatever, and then the slow beat comes in, and it's that's the payoff for the music. It's you're expecting some sort of a bass drop, but also you're looking for a sort of a mad sound to keep the momentum of the tune going. But it's not being able to predict what that mad sound's going to be that makes it exciting. And again, once again, this is where these sort of glitch software plugins play a big role of messing with people's expectations for the music. And that's just really useful, and just essentially one part of what I wanted to say about this.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting idea. I'm probably not as familiar with that genre as perhaps I should be. I don't know. Gaz, think we could is there a glitch prog genre waiting to be explored here that you could use something like this? And I mean, and also by the same token, do you like to mess? I mean, we all like to kind of find our own unique way of mangling a sound to a degree. I mean, that's part of the recording and production process, right? Rather, I mean, yes, you want it to sound good and maybe capture the vocal beautifully, but there's also parts where you want to really mess it up, right?
Yeah, I know, of course. I mean, I've been doing a lot with samplers lately, and you know, and it's quite interesting how a lot of the glitch stuff originated from equipment that just couldn't keep up with what you were asking it to do. So the glitching, you know, was a kind of a byproduct that people then. I remember, like, back in the 90s, you know, sort of trying to get stuff to sort of break it, really, you know, just to try and send too many notes into it and make it do weird things, and then try and harness that in some sort of kind of creative way. Wow, it feels like such a long time ago now, but it's great. I mean, I love messing up with stuff. I've been playing around, actually. This is in for review at the moment. I've been running this is like a distortion pedal. It's called a Aftershock by Source Audio, and it's got a computer editor, and I've been trying to sort of make it do weird stuff that it's not meant to do. I'm trying to find ways of, or like, messing with the parameters. And yeah, so I mean, yeah, that is in my kind of nature, really, just to try and break things. So and I'm very, very good at it as well. Yes.
I know, Rich, does this sort of does this have a part to play in what you do as well? I mean, I'm guessing, and I am being general here, a lot of the stuff that you do is about capturing, you know, so there's one part which is recording where you maybe don't want to mess the sound up, but then there's the mix and the kind of after processing where maybe you do, right?
Of course. Tons of it in various places, but hopefully tastefully. And hopefully not as a gimmick to replace. It is a legitimate arrangement device, just like stopping for three beats and picking back up is, or just like doing something interesting in that space, or just like a cadenza is. It's a good, solid arranging device. But if overused, to my ears, can become gimmicky pretty quickly. So I don't, first of all, mind screwing with the sound at all, using distortions, using where appropriate, using anything, glitching, stutter editing, editing things so tightly that you create an audio pitch that has nothing to do with the original sound that from which it's being derived. I mean, I don't object to any of it if it's used well and tastefully and it doesn't sound gimmicky to me.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I was interesting, a couple of people are in the comments saying, and what you going back to what you were saying, Steve, about how sometimes it's used in place of, actually, I can't be bothered to work out how to do it myself. If I just put this across it, then something interesting will happen, and it means I don't have to come up with it myself. I mean, there is an element of that to a degree, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's certainly true. I think there certainly is an element of that, but my response would be, who cares? Does it ultimately matter whether you designed the sound or somebody else did? And also, if it does matter, how far down that argument do we go? Do we do we say that we don't use any instruments that we haven't personally created or designed? I don't have a problem with it. In the end, I suppose I'm ultimately just sort of like focused on the result. Speaking of which, just building on what Gaz was saying, I thought I'd show everybody this. This is my distortion pedal board. This is something that I use all the time to add a kind of extra sense of energy to these machines that we're seeing behind us, and also a lot of plug-in machines as well. They're all distortions and they have slightly different flavors, but there's something about slightly distorting or saturating a sound, or even megalithically distorting it, that's really compelling for an audience. We have an association with distortion. Things like it kind of equates with energy. It equates with unpredictability and, I suppose, ultimately excitement. And so I would just really recommend to everybody, quite frankly, get yourself a pedal board, fill it up with quite pretty looking distortion pedals, and it really just adds a layer of controllable randomness, I suppose, to your sound. And I love it, quite frankly.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, there is I looked at the Pittsburgh Modular Microvolt 3900, which has a drive section on the output. Just adding a touch of that or loads, it really makes the sound kind of exciting and interesting. And it's a psychoacoustic effect, isn't it? I mean, distortion, it kind of goes back to, when it was first introduced, it were things that were being worked too hard, that were kind of like blowing up and outside of the scope of what they're supposed to do. And it's become the repertoire of what we as humans interpret as excitement. Rock guitars, when they first came out, were exciting. That distorted sound was very exciting. It was because everything had been so clean up to that, or certainly unintentionally, it was supposed to be that way. I mean, obviously, you got wax cylinders that sounded pretty ghastly, but they weren't trying to sound bad. They were trying to sound as good as they could. But the distortion of the guitar,
it's very evocative, and we associate distortion even now with things going wrong, and things going wrong, especially when it's in a controlled environment like music, is compelling. And we're not at a gig watching guitarists and thinking, wow, is he going to catch fire any moment now, although we might do, but there's something just in the back of our mind. This is a compelling thing. I should keep watching just in case something amazing happens, and sometimes it does.
That's true. Interesting. I mean, we don't know much more about this yet because this is just a pre-announcement. The Glitch Rack will be coming out sometime soon, but if you want to stay in touch, go to noisebites.de and they'll be releasing it sometime and soon, probably have a bit more information. But it was really more about just a question of that whole thing about mangling sound that was a bit more interesting. And in fact, also applies to... before we get on to the next topic, I will just drop our... the message from Synchro Arts, who got 30% off the plugin Revoice Pro.
Have you heard about the deal you get from Synchro Arts? It's great for ADR and stacking vocal parts. Get 30% off. Audio switched in a blink. Harmony's always in sync. You wanna rhyme in time and get into this tune. Get Revoice Pro.
landing soon. You ought to arrive in time. Doo-be-doo-doo-doo-doo, and get into this tune. Doo-be-doo-doo-doo-doo, get Revoice Pro. Now the offer's ending soon.
Thank you very much. That is synchroarts.com. If you go to bit.ly/revoice30, that will get you to synchroarts.com, and there's 30% off Revoice Pro until the end of June. But speaking of messing things up, there was this other thing which I thought was pretty cool, which was this guy. This is a new organismic drum machine from Mr. Vlad Krymer, or Somar Labs, who made the Lyra 8, which I am very enamoured with. And this is a drum machine which is kind of built along the same lines, although it does do proper stuff too. It sounds like it does a lot of real crazy business. I don't know if it's going to look like that when it's finally finished. But it's got the, you can see there's the same little touch pads that you get on the Lyra 8. But this is all dry, you know, or certainly just internal processing. There's a lot of patch points. That's going to be coming out at the end of the year, 12 to 1400 euros. So, you know, not this cheapest thing, a bit more expensive than the pipe and the Lyra 8. But could be a lot of fun. I'm guessing, Gaz, this might be something, this might be something that appeals to you. Have you had a chance to play with the Lyra 8 yet?
Oh yeah, it's fantastic. It's you know, it's one of those total desirable boxes, isn't it? You know, it's one of those things. It's so unlike anything else. And oh yes, I really want one. But this, yeah, this is very intriguing and sounds kind of very otherworldly. And I was it looks very kind of like, I don't know, post-apocalyptic, doesn't it, in its current sort of guise. So it probably won't look like that, will it, you think?
I don't know. It's hard to tell. I mean, maybe, maybe not.
Yeah. Because, I mean, the Lyra is a very elegant-looking thing, really, isn't it? You know, so this is sort of... I mean, it does sound really cool. It's got that certain, like, that... I don't know, that quality, that thing, you know, that special thing. I'm very keen to get hold of this. Incidentally, speaking of Russian stuff, just there's a very cool podcast at the moment, the Finders Keepers podcast. It's called Polyvox, and it's a sort of they've named it that, and it's a it's sort of like an edit of a load of obscure Russian synth rock. I just listened to it this morning. It's super cool. And I was always wondering what those Polyvox, what music was being made with all those kind of wacky old Russian synths. So check that out if you want to hear some. It's really good. Finders Keepers.
I'll have to check that out.
Hotels. Yeah, it's really good. But yeah, I mean, this thing, I can't wait to try one, actually. Definitely. Yeah, very keen. I mean, it's difficult. I couldn't really glean much information about
it's pretty unclear. I mean, when I interviewed him, he was talking about it being not only the ability to make sounds on the fly, but also it would work in a standard rhythmic mode, but also it would get funky with the rhythmic aspects of it. You could mess all of that stuff up too. You know, that's the thing. So it would have, I mean, as it's a drum machine, it has to have some standardization. Otherwise it wouldn't really be a drum machine. It would just be something that made a noise in a randomly rhythmic fashion, which wouldn't be quite the same. So I don't know. Rich, you look like you're troubled by this concept, or maybe you didn't hear what I was saying.
The most intriguing thing about this thing to me was that it had these metal posts sticking up in it that allowed you to use alligator clips to sort of real-time circuit.
Yeah.
Did you see this?
Yes, I did. That, I don't know if that's the...
That's amazing.
You like that idea?
That's an amazing idea. And they have voltage limits as to what can be done. You get to the end of the video and they're still displaying amazing new features that don't exist in any other drum machine. I was blown away by this thing. It starts out with like the really, really, really weird side of it. And that, I thought that was an interesting marketing choice. But as you get into it, you find that you can do almost anything analog-ish, drummy with this thing, and then beyond almost anything. The design boggles the mind. I was amazed by this thing.
He's a very clever and interesting. I mean, he thinks very differently to a lot of the other. And we did a Meet the Makers interview with him. He's a really nice chap. Just really kind of driven by this sort of it's almost like a spiritual philosophical approach to the design of instruments that require you to play them in a non-standard way, because, you know, he's trying to force you to go off from where you normally go with these things. But it seems like the drum machine actually, in some ways, you know, in its just basic form, will allow you to do drum machine-y things, so you can be normal, but you could also take it a lot further out as well.
It seems like the sound creation possibilities within this thing go far beyond what most of the current drum machines that I'm most interested in are doing. Those are also very, very valid in terms of what they do, and they do well. And I can rattle off a few that I'm not going to do right now. But the point is, this thing can be like them, but could be completely otherworldly in the way it's synthesizing things. And I think it's really a very, very interesting instrument concept. I've never really seen anything like it. And I know nothing about the guy you're talking about, but I'm not surprised by any of the things you say, because this thing is brilliant.
Excellent. Steve, I mean, this is the sort of thing that, you know, I mean... Like I said, you know, when I got the Lyre, I was thinking, oh, God, this is a nightmare. But the things it makes you do and the sounds that you can come up with, the places it takes you, help guides you towards this sort of randomness, but still be beautiful or horrible, is really the thing that makes it so interesting. And if this looks like it could be more.
I completely agree. I mean, firstly, I really like the way it looks. And I'm really quite, as it stands right now, it's a prototype, and I'm quite sort of sensitive to that sort of thing. I find that, you know, if you're trying to create new sounds, having an interface that you actually enjoy looking at makes a big difference. I know this seems like an obvious thing to say, but in the hardware world, for me, it's been very often the difference between buying and not buying. So if this design stays as it does, then I think I'll probably seek it out. The other reason why I'd probably seek it out was that from the demo, the sounds that were being made really reminded me of the kind of drum sounds that Aphex Twin was making in the earlier stages of his career. So I'm sort of thinking, or at least what he was releasing. So I'm thinking sort of 91 to 93. And I've loved those sounds. I've never really been able to work out exactly how it was done. You can kind of get an idea that there was some sort of sine suite going on and a bit of distortion. Never managed to get there. This machine seems to just do it. And then I would imagine take you off into whole new sort of sonic tangents that I think would be, you know, essentially fascinating. And with its sort of modular approach and with the other sort of performance aspects of it, you've got that serendipity thing. You know, you could discover something that you weren't looking for, you weren't expecting, but it takes your composition off into a new direction. So I'm actually really excited about this. And I get a lot of satisfaction out of making, you know, drum sounds from modular equipment. In fact, actually, that's the thing that I use the Roland System 100M behind me here the most for.
It's making just got drum this... sounds, right.
Yeah, that's right. Because it's the envelopes on this modular, this old Roland modular, are really snappy. They've just got a thing. And with a bit of crafting there, you can end up with some really, you know, great drum sounds. In fact, you can actually hear the old Rolands on some, I think, early Mute Records releases, and also 4AD as well. They've just got a sound. This machine seems like it could be a couple of generations beyond that, and I'm kind of excited, quite frankly.
Yeah, I've just found the spec. They've put the page up on the website, actually. It's 4 drum channels, 4 envelope generators, 4 independent loop controllers. That's the interesting thing. So maybe not a sequencer. Loop controllers, clock generator, wide-range LFO, Chaos, unique pseudo-random generator to shift registers, blah, 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 processor, gates, VCAs. It looks like it's a trigger-based rather than a drum machine. It's more of a drum synthesizer, but I can't tell. It's hard to be clear from this, but it looks a little bit like it's a sheet of wood with a bit of Sharpie on it at the moment, which I'm not against. It's got a bit of Bastille about it to a degree.
There is just one other thing I'd like to throw in on this, sort of a little bit of an aside for the music technology. I've noticed in the last year or so that those... sort of early Walt record compilation sound, like artificial intelligence, that the kids have rediscovered this. And these sounds are coming back in a new form, but it's sort of built from that DNA. I reckon the Pulsar could become like an integral instrument to the rebirth of artificial intelligence. God, that sounded pretentious. I'm so sorry, everybody, but I think you know what I mean.
The rebirth, okay, that's a show title. Rebirth of artificial intelligence, okay, and that might be a show title of AI. Right, we'll put that.
At last.
Yeah, that could be a show title. Anyway, well, we could go from one extreme to sort of another. This has got a very slow introduction, but it's worth the wait. It kind of, the payoff is definitely when he gets it going. So this is an old barrel organ. This is by a chap called Patrick Mathis. And he's basically transcribed Michael Jackson's Smooth Criminal. And he's used kind of cluster notes and rhythmic things, which are just... It gets quite advanced. There we go. I mean, it's the full piece, and then right at the end, there's a really lovely bit. Actually, I'll see if I find the bit at the end. He just does this lovely little kind of... There we go. It's a lovely little bit. It's a lovely little smile. Patrick Mathis. I mean, what a way to spend your time. I mean, in many ways, it's similar to this kind of this idea of Black MIDI, you know, which use the same sort of principles. And I can't imagine how difficult it is to do this, but I'm certainly glad somebody is. I mean, we've seen a number of... I mean, I know you've seen electromechanical stuff, but the idea of this with just on a barrel organ, he does like jazz transcriptions and stuff as well, apparently, which I haven't got examples of. What a great idea though, eh, Rich? Oh, you're muted. Take a drink.
Take a drink.
I would if I had one. Oh, you do one then. Yeah. Oh, I have got one. Hold on. Yeah.
All right. So I loved this. Completely love everything about this. I love this. And mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything electro about this at all.
No, nothing.
This is entirely mechanical. Which is what's really incredible about it. And I would just like to say that piano roll is the theoretical antecedent to binary digital, because it's either a hole or it's not a hole.
Yeah, there's no dynamics, is there? Although there were a couple of knobs that he kind of tweaked
wasn't
and pulled.
I don't know about that. I'm just saying, as far as data storage goes, a piano roll is very much like digital storage in an analog form.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's because instead of ones and zeros, you got a hole or a not a hole.
Yeah, I don't know how many. I wonder how many what the range of one of those organs is, because I mean, obviously, it's only small, so it won't go right as far as some of the big. But
it's the size of the horns that you hook it up to.
Yeah, I suppose so. It reminds me a little bit of kind of somebody making a replica of, you know, the cathedral in Barcelona out of matchsticks. You know, it's sort of as pointless, but still very pleasing in some ways.
I grew up around these instruments, being at carnivals and fairs associated often with the carousel ride. And there was a whole history to this sort of piano roll based music writing and performing. I love this stuff.
Yeah.
I'm totally down with this.
Excellent. Sorry. I don't know. There's been an element where you could maybe have this. You were talking about last week about the performance aspect, where it's nice to have an analog instrument alongside the computer stuff for the repeatability and the portability. How about a barrel organ with a servo motor? Or, you know, you've basically got to just kind of, you are the clock. That's it. Okay, here we go. Everybody dance.
Right. I think there's a kind of sound to this. Sort of automatic organ playing, you know. And it reminds me of a composer that I really like and I'd recommend to everybody if they haven't heard him. It's called Conlon Nancarrow. I don't know if that rings any bells. But he was fascinating. He was a pianist in the 1940s, 50s in the US. Mm. And he wrote sort of serious classical piano music, but he got a bit, let's say, frustrated with the limits of how you could play as a human being. So he started writing music for automatic pianos, like pianolas. And so they couldn't be played by people. They could only be played by machines. And there's plenty of examples of his work out on Spotify. And it sounds extraordinary. It's got that hybrid thing of the human being's creativity, but being played by a machine, which is something that we're really obviously used to now, living in a world of music technology. But there he was, as far as I'm aware, actually putting little holes into the sort of pianola scripts, just like this guy has done, and creating new serious music. It's fascinating. What also particularly fascinates me about this is that we're living in a time where it's kind of, this idea has been flipped around. So here was a chap who was writing music for machines to play back in the 1940s and 50s. These days, we've got machines writing music for human beings to play. This is the whole artificial intelligence, machine learning.
Yeah,
so and it's got a sound of its own as well. Has anyone checked out these videos on YouTube of AI-created compositions? There's a weirdness to them, or probably just because they're new. We're living in an exciting time, I think, where the combination of human creativity and or playing is being mixed with machine or computer creativity and or playing. And, yeah, it's fascinating. And having a barrel organ playing Smooth Criminal is just the beginning.
Yeah, maybe so. It's interesting, Gaz, isn't it? It's almost like, I mean, I guess the process of creating those kind of piano roll scores, it must be almost as boring and frustrating as maybe using something like PageR on the Fairlight or really early MIDI sequencers. I imagine, could you imagine, you start off with your thing and then you punch a hole and then maybe you've got to tape it over because you realise it's in the wrong place or whatever. And just getting that whole thing, there must be a real skill to it. I'm hoping nobody's written some software for it to happen.
I mean, I was just wondering what would happen if you actually put some black MIDI scores through this barrel organ, you know, because I don't know what the note range is. I mean,
what the restrike really rate is on the vowels, I suppose, as well.
Yeah, you don't really have to crank that handle. How does it work with the handle, though? I mean, with those things, are they geared so the handle? Do you control the tempo with the handle?
So
it's a bit like when you play a hurdy-gurdy, you know, a lot of the skill of a hurdy-gurdy is keeping that rhythm of the crank going. So, so you'd have to really work it. Ah, that's cool. I mean, it's like Steve talking about Conlon Nancarrow, you know, who I've often described him as like the aphex twin of his day, really, you know, taking things in such a bizarre directions and making music that was absolutely impossible to do in other ways, which totally validates it in my opinion. But yeah, I mean, I'd love to see what you could do with these things if you really pushed it, because there's no limit on the polyphony on there, is there? I mean,
I suppose however many pipes you've got would be the limit, but
right. Oh, the pipes not. It's not. All right. Okay. Yeah.
Because they're just little ones. I've found some Conlon Nancarrow. I just want to see what it sounds like. I'll play it in the background and see if it works.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's pretty bonkers. There we go.
Hold on. Sorry. I'll try and turn that.
That's all right. No, I like it.
I'll keep that rolling. Great idea, though.
Yeah, there's a museum somewhere in London I haven't been to yet. There's like a museum dedicated to all sort of these orchestrions and player pianos. And who could forget that amazing, amazing Pat Metheny sort of kind of crazy thing that he built. Do you remember that?
Orchestrion. Yeah, that's right.
I think that's one of the most amazing things. So yeah, it is, but it's still a lot.
I suppose it's sort of the equivalent, though, isn't it, of like man in shed or, you know, person in shed doing something that sort of almost seems completely willfully difficult and complicated. I mean, in the same way, it's hard, you know, it's hard to learn to play an instrument with such brilliance, but to make it more difficult somehow.
It was conceived as a recording medium of its day.
I suppose
there
so.
There were recorded performances of Rachmaninoff and James P. Johnson and Scott Joplin and Fats Waller and all kinds of people that were done this way. And then what happened was they realized that this thing is like modeling clay. You can write music on it if you choose to. You can use it to record, but as I said before, it's a hole or it's not a hole. So if you make holes, you make music. So they discovered that it was like modeling clay to them as music. So people started writing for it. It didn't start this way.
So did there must have been machines that recorded.
Well, it may have also gone side by side, but it was the recording medium. In other words, I'm not quite sure of the progression, but I can tell you that people were recorded to paper, you know, rolls.
Wow, okay. I didn't know that. Yeah. I'm just looking for some information about those machines, but I can't anywhere. But
And also,
there's a long history of this.
Just building on that, I know that my grandparents, when they were around in South London, they had a pianola that they would plug into the mains and it would turn, obviously. But they would tell me that they would go down to the piano shop on the Lewisham High Street and they'd be able to buy from a selection of performances, just like Rich was describing, to bring home. And that would be their entertainment for the weekend, particularly if it was recordings of songs that you would sing along to. So you would have, because neither my grandparents actually could play, they would just buy like a roll from the shop, bring it home, stick it into the piano, get all the family around from down the street and have a good like sing along at night.
Good old knees.
Sounds
up.
Amazing, really. A Cockney knees up, but somehow in South London instead.
Wow. And I guess I hadn't really thought about it. Of course it would have been recording me. Yeah. Interesting. Anyway, I just thought I'd throw that one out there. That was great fun. Oh, blimey. Someone on fire. Who's that? Ah, Rich, you've got to evacuate. Just make sure you grab your USB stick. Okay, we're probably going to lose Rich for a little while. Hopefully we won't see his hotel room burst into flames while he's exiting the building.
I'm wondering if you could have an LFO that could control the playback of a piano.
Yeah, easily. You could make an... just to a motor, it should be no possible. I thought we might throw in another topic quickly because... have we got time? Has everybody got time for another quick topic? Did you see this one?
Go for it. Oh, yeah. Mm.
So this is a new plugin from Zenaptic who make these incredible, unique and interesting kind of takes on existing DSP technology and really sort of turn around. This is basically, he says it's like an infinite band compressor with no attack or no release that learns from the program material using AI and just makes it sound more intense. And that's what it looks like. And they use this this interesting kind of graphic. So there are a couple of examples coming up, which hopefully we'll be able to hear quickly. Excuse me. And you can change the bias to sort of make it sound certain ways. It's really weird. It sounds like there's actually a pipe organ in there somewhere. Here we go. This is without... So it's a kind of make it sound better kind of plugin, but it does more. It's more than just that. It's doing some very clever things. Wow, that's massively stereo. I don't know if you can hear that. I don't know if this. Yeah. So anyway, this is yet another brilliant piece of Zenaptic stuff. I know, Steve, you're really into Zenaptic things. Have you?
Yeah.
Presumably, you're on their mailing list and would have got the notification same time as we did, right?
Yes, and I've been trying it out. It's fascinating, I have to say. When I first was using it, it sounded like a sort of digital version of Saturation. Except that I'm sort of struggling for ways to describe this here. So you could increase the bottom end, but it wasn't just like whacking up a EQ. You could, when they talk about increasing detail within a mix, this is certainly true. I had it running over a mix I was working on this morning, actually, and I forgot it was there. And I thought, oh, and I just switched it off after about half an hour, and it sounded almost immediately like the life had been sucked out of this mix once the plugin was switched off. Now, I'm going to try to be careful with this, though, because I know there's a certain amount of excitement that you can get from this sort of stuff simply because it's new. Do you know what I mean? It's new and it's impressive. It's a bit like using an exciter to brighten up your mix. It's you can lose perspective on whether it's actually improving what's going on, especially the clarity in the mix, or whether your ears are tired. Having said that, I'm really kind of excited by this, and I can imagine this going on a lot of mixes from here on. It does give this, as they say in the marketing, it does give an extra level of clarity in the mix, and it does something that I'm not getting from anything else at the moment. So I'm certainly going to be using this from here on, that's for sure.
I didn't know. I suppose putting it across a mix makes sense in a way. I mean, there's no reason why you wouldn't. You often put a bus compressor on. You do a lot of mastering. Sorry, Gaz, you do quite a lot of mastering. So have you got any Zonaptic stuff? Because, I mean, they do some great pieces of software. I mean, is this something that you might want to try?
Oh, most definitely, yes. And, I mean, I used to love when I used to have a TC Power Core, there was a thing called Character. This sort of reminded me a little bit of that, in that, you know, few controls, and it would just bring the part of what you want in the sound forward and make it seem more solid. And I used to love that plugin. They were very guarded about what was the underlying technology with Character, so I'm not sure what was actually going on under the hood. And you, similar to this, there was only just a few controls, and I think that few controls is something that's highly appealing about this, you know, that literally it's an amount and then a bias. Just I think the bias, does that just sort of bias it between a brighter and a darker,
I think, yeah, well,
they actually have a few different sort of bias profiles within the plugin that you can select from. So you can have it's kind of hard to explain, but you can kind of focus the effect maybe on the lower end of the spectrum or the higher end, or you can have it uniform across the entire frequency spectrum. And it all gives different variations on this overall effect. And as you say, bringing things forward into the mix, including, I know it sounds a bit odd, but the entire mix itself, which is rather good.
Because I know that with the Zonaptic, you use a totally different processing than any other kind of software developers out there. They use all sorts of kind of, you know, neural networks and very, you know, high end processing. But I was really surprised, and I met Dennis, the CEO of the company.
Oh yeah,
Superbooth. He was nothing like I was expecting. He's like, "All right, dude, you know, yeah, let's rock." He's really like, I was just like, "Oh," and he's very cool. And those in the know, it's always worth paying Zonaptic a visit when they're at a trade show for special reasons that I will not just divulge. But yes, make sure you always visit them.
It's the similar thing that you get if you happen to ask. You get to the secret cupboard at the Dave Smith booth. Same sort of principle.
Okay.
Rich, these are the sort of things. I mean, is there a sort of distrust somewhere in the innate kind of mix or a traditional engineering's mind that sort of goes, this does sound more better, in the same way that using exciter sort of almost feels like cheating somehow? You should be able to get your mix to sound this way without employing this kind of technology or whatever you can get.
Whatever you can get, if it's better. I'd love to hear this thing. I didn't, unfortunately, get to prepare this topic because of the time frame today.
Oh, but, okay.
I'm quite sure that Zonaptic is making excellent stuff, and I'd love to hear this thing. Now, to kick it sideways for a minute, I'm currently loving Ozone 8 for this sort of thing. But I'm all about hearing, I'd love to hear them side by side, as a matter of fact, which I've never done. So, no, I'm not against anything in some sort of spiritual theory here. I just want to hear it.
Yeah, and I think that's fair enough. I mean, Ozone, as we know, is great. It works very much in a sort of traditional modules of mastering, you know, in the dynamic EQ. There is an exciter in there as well, but they're sort of, they're familiar terms, I suppose, and the way that you order them and the way that you process them is kind of has a hardware parallel that you could do if you were, if you had all that stuff in a rack. Whereas something like this is just like, here's two knobs and you put it across the mix. It feels, you know, we don't know what's going on. He's having trouble explaining it exactly. It just sounds, it sounds betterer. But there is an element of, you know, there's a danger that one gets in. If it sounds so good, everybody ends up using it and it all ends up sounding, everything then sounds this good. Or as, do you see what I mean? I suppose.
Yes.
There's a danger, I suppose.
This is why I was saying before, I'm sure that this is going to be like everywhere very soon. It gives you that kind of ultra vivid sound that reminds me a bit of Serum, you know, the Extra Records Serum,
right,
which is a fantastic synth. And it's very present. It's ultra real in a way. And I think this is almost like the mastering or compression or saturator equivalent. I'm sure it's going to be everywhere. So in the end, we've got to just watch out how tastefully can you, use this stuff without just, obliterating the dynamics or whatever. There is another product that I'd like to mention, which I use quite a lot, which is really good. There's a company called Waves Factory. They had a plugin called Track Spacer, which is superb for mixing. But they've also launched an exciter called Spectre. And this is really useful for mixing, where my understanding at least, is it's kind of resynthesizing or creating, much like an exciter, content, but in very specific regions, frequency regions. So you can brighten things up, you can give it more weight or whatever it is that you want to do. It's really useful and it's much less harsh than other exciters in my experience. So I'd recommend that as well. It's something else to check out.
Okay, thank you. It says here that that one is a sound shaping tool that combines best features of an enhancer coupled with a graphic parametric equalizer. So yeah, similar kind of stuff. Yeah. Track Spacer is supposed to be very good. I mean, it does frequency dependent side chaining and kind of pushes things out of the way for when you want the emphasis in that. You know, I mean, I know, because Gaz, I think, didn't you talk to me, there's something in, Melodyne, which does similar sort of things, where you've got a frequency-based, FFT-based equalizer, is that right? I can't remember what it was called. Muted. Hey, take a drink.
What's it called? It's called the sound editor or something. And what it does is it lets you change the harmonic series. So say, for instance, you increase the fundamental or say you wanted to raise like the third harmonic, it would raise the third harmonic in all of the,
in everything in tune. Right. Okay.
Yeah. So all relative to whatever the pitch is. And it's absolutely incredible. I mean, every time I play with it, I'm always struck by a feeling of like, wow, it still feels a little bit kind of weird to adjust. I'm not entirely sure what I'm doing half the time with it, but it still feels like sort of tapping into the future a little bit with it. It's really, really cool. I think the example that I've used before
was a saxophone, wasn't it? Yeah.
It just seemed to sort of, it was slightly off mic, and by increasing the fundamental, it felt as though it was pulling it like into the mic, and really, really interesting. But again, when you start messing around with it and start doing like kind of naughty stuff with it, you know, just crazy stuff with it, it sort of feels like there's a world to explore with that. And incidentally, I've just been messing around with Studio One version 4, and that's got it's not fully implemented yet, I think, but it's going to have the ARA, is that what it's called, too? Which is the integration.
The API integration,
I mean, it's as it currently stands, it's fully kind of integrated the Melodyne inside of... if you've got Design Editor inside of Studio One, which is really cool. But when that new thing is available, it's going to mean that you can use the chord track. That's a new thing in Studio One version 4. Sorry, this is a deviation, but it's really interesting. You're going to be able to use the chord track and Melodyne concurrently. So when you change the chords, it's actually going to use Melodyne's kind of DNA.
Wow. For,
manipulating the
That's a bit too mind blowing. I'm sure there'll be some like that, some of those demos where you're just going, oh, it's witchcraft, I tell you. I know, Rich, you're very familiar with the Melodyne process. Have you used that term? What is it, harmonic EQ or harmonic shifting that Gaz was talking about?
I haven't used the tracking EQs. I have no experience with them.
Ah, okay.
Interested right. too, but haven't.
Yeah. Well, I'm guessing, Rich, your hotel has reset the fire alarm and everything's okay now. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be bundled out of the room by some swarthy fireman.
Nick, it is just called Sound Editor.
Okay.
That's the most interesting name, but in Melodyne, the Sound Editor right. part of it.
Ah, okay, right. Thank you. Well, I think we'll probably wrap up now because I know we've been going on a little bit longer. I added that extra topic there just because I felt I could. I want to say thank you very much to everybody for joining us. Thanks to you guys in the chat room on the YouTube side. That's sonicstate.com. That's youtube.com/sonicstate/live, where you can get to that. And also everybody in the IRC chat room, sonicstate.com/live. If you subscribe to our YouTube channel, you'll get notifications every time we put videos out. We just published the Pittsburgh Modular Microvolt 3900 review. We've got a bunch of other stuff and the Vocal Synth 2 sort of demo preset walkthrough. And obviously, you'll be notified every time we go for live streaming, which is every Wednesday at 4 p.m. So thank you. I want to say also thank you to our Isotope. Don't forget, if you want to win a copy of Vocal Synth 2, we're looking for the hashtag Vocal Transformer and the hashtag Vocal Synth at Sonic State and at Isotope Inc. That's via Twitter. And also, I want to say thank you to Synchro Arts. If you want to check out Revoice Pro, 30% discount, don't forget, either go to synchroarts.com or go to bit.ly/revoice30 and they'll be able to track it from there. But for now, I want to say thank you very much to all our guests. Gaz, thanks for joining us. I think you're coming over to us tomorrow, is that right? It is this week, isn't it? We're going to have a look at some Electron stuff, so I'm looking forward to that. Thanks for coming. And also, Mr. Rich Hilton, have you got a show tonight?
Nope.
Ah, night off in London. Have you got anything special planned?
Not yet.
Oh, okay. If I was closer, I would offer to drive up and show you the sights, but I don't actually know many of the sights in London. But I hope you have a restful evening. When's your next show, then?
Friday, Isle of Wight Festival.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. That'll be fun. Great.
Followed by Saturday, a gig in Italy.
Okay.
And Sunday, a gig back here.
Well, Sunday, of course, 12:30 UK time is the next time the English soccer team play. So you might want to try and synchronize your schedule so you maybe get the chance to check that out if you're interested in that sort of thing.
I might be in the air at that moment, but we'll see.
Okay. You won't get any of that in Italy, of course, because they didn't qualify this year, which is unheard of. It's unheard of. Absolutely unheard of. It's a national, it's an outrage because, they've won it so many times. That wasn't a dig, by the way. It was just an astonishing fact. And also, Mr. Steve Hillier, thank you very much for joining us as well. Pleasure to have you on as ever.
Thank you for having me.
So, as I say, that's it for this week. I want to say thank you very much to everybody. We're going to see you all later. Maybe I'll finish you off with some more of that really bizarre, random... I haven't got it anymore. I was going to say the Conlon... what was his name? The pianist? Conlon Nancarrow. I don't think I've got that window up because it was pretty random. Anyway, that's it for this time. See you next week. Take care.